They say everyone has a book inside them, and often that's where it should stay. I really can't help but be aghast that the author wants you to pay. But we're just a pair of absolute bookends, you don't want to be like us. So if you want to read, pick some quality literature rather than this dross. Welcome to Two Absolute Bookends, where we read books so bad you should burn them before reading. This is episode 11, whose, due to format changes, name is going to be known pending, but let's see. And this week, joining me in kissing the fleeting stead of death is Louis.
Hello.
And this week, now we're really mixing things up, and we are reading The Eye of Argon by Jim Tace. I would say support the author, but he's now been dead for a little while, and nobody ever made any money out of this book anyway, so there's no one to support, but you should definitely read it either way.
Yeah, as I understand, it's quite a well-known short story.
Yeah.
For being horrifically bad.
Yeah, it's lauded in infamy as being one of the worst pieces of fantasy literature of all time. Though it's only a short novelette, if you will. But it was written by a 16-year-old Jim Tace in 1970, which he sent to a local sci-fi magazine to get published. And get published it did, and ever since then it's done the rounds at conventions everywhere where people try to get to the end reading it without laughing, basically. Jim Tace, he seems to have gotten used to this infamy in the fullness of time, like, you know, he was quite willing to hold up his hands to writing it, and that it had its problems. You know, he defended the fact that, you know, not many people had any full stories written and published when they're 16, but he admits it wasn't good. You know, he knows what he did, and he knew how to be a good sport of it, but he did point out that it's a zero-sum game not being a good sport about something like this. You'll just get the piss taken out of you more if you try and defend a piece of literature like this.
Yeah, it's nice when people, like, I don't know, own their failures. The Room, Tommy Wiseau, you know, he made a huge, you know, killing out of it by touring it and... You know, I still feel like with him there's a bit of a weirdness where I'm not quite sure if he realises it's terrible.
I think he knows that people think it's terrible, but I still think that he just thinks that everyone's a little misguided about it. He's just like, you just don't get my genius, Denny. I don't know who that
was. I like that, yeah. Who are you doing there?
I was doing Lisa from The Room.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, there has apparently been people that have questioned whether Jim Tace actually wrote the book. There's some people that think it's too perfectly bad. Some people think that it's like a satire and that it was either intentionally written that badly, either by Jim or by someone else, and like put it out there under a pseudonym. I mean, there doesn't seem to be much actual proof from that other than a couple of people that have like claimed it with no real evidence. And it seems to be like, you know, I mean, this guy was like accepting it up until his death that he was the one that wrote it, and you know, everyone involved in the original publishing was like, yeah, we just got sent this. So I think that's just people overthinking how bad people can be at writing. Mm-hmm. When they're like 16. But yeah, like I say, Jim Tace died sadly in 2002, aged 49. I mean, don't know why. I actually looked. Nobody seems to know on the internet how he actually died, so maybe he was a made-up person. maybe that's the proof. Oh, like, there's like quite a morbid part on his Wikipedia discussion page. It was like, does anyone know how this guy died? Could someone please tell me? The page feels incomplete. And I mean, I kind of agree, because that's why I was looking at the discussion page. But yeah.
Who looks at the Wikipedia discussion page? What's wrong with you?
I was just trying my hardest to find out how he died. It was the last place left. You run out of articles about on who this guy is after like the first page of Google. There's not much on him as a person other than the Eye of Argon. Apparently he likes collecting German swords. That made it onto the Wikipedia page, but not how he died.
I think you two would have got on.
Yeah. Yeah, we would have had a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
I think that covers all the history you need to know about the book to give you some context. I mean, like, I've pretty much summarised everything important on the Wikipedia page as it is, but there's more there and not much anywhere else about the man, if you want to learn more about him.
Yeah, and for anyone dying to know what happens in the, you know, remaining chapters of The Way the Stars Fall, don't worry, we will be returning to it. This is just going to be a brief interlude at the third waypoint of The Way the Stars Fall, so...
Yeah, we decided that, you know, it'd be a good thing to be doing going forward in any long books you do, you know, to split up things so you're not reading, like, 30, 40 chapters of the same thing. Just every, I don't know, we'll probably decide on a book-by-book basis, but at just certain intervals through, just take a little break to read something short and it's just a bit of fun like this. I suppose that's you up to date on all the housekeeping? And we may as well begin. This is going to be quite different from... Well, it's going to be different from our normal coverage anyway, because, like I say, this thing is... There's no copyright covering this, you know. No one... They're, like, it's popularised by being read aloud on the internet and elsewhere. So we're going to try something a bit different, and we're going to be doing sort of like a reading through the book... We'll be taking, like, we'll take breaks if something ridiculously funny or stupid comes up and have a bit of a chat about it.
Which, by the sounds of it, it will, yeah.
It will, believe me. I mean, I read, like, a chapter summary by accident while I was looking at the Wikipedia page, and I, like, nearly died from laughter just reading it being summarised, let alone how this guy who... there's an amazing quote about Jim Tayus that I think I have to... that I have to put out there. one moment. It's like... He was described in a sci-fi magazine as a malaprop genius, a McGonagall of prose with an eerie gift for choosing the wrong word and then misapplying it. Which is just... I am looking forward to this a great deal. But yeah, so we're going to be... We'll be picking him up on his shit as we go through the chapter Reading It Aloud, because, hell, it seems that Reading It Aloud's basically a party game anyway, so why not get in on that? But once we're done with each chapter, we will take some time out at the end and just discuss what happened and any feelings that, you know, we want to chat about but didn't seem worth bringing up sort of like in situ to ruin what flow, if there is any, of the writing. So, with all of that out of the way, I suppose it's time to get into The Eye of Argon by Jim Tayus. I'm going to be reading this chapter, because it's not too long, but I will be mixing things up as we go along.
There's no chapter title, is there?
Nope, no chapter titles.
Nice.
I miss them. But yes, so, The Eye of Argon by Jim Tayus. The weather-beaten trail wound ahead into the dust-racked climes of the barren land which dominates large portions of the Nogolian Empire. Age-worn hoofprints smothered by the sifting sands of time shone dully against the dust-splattered crust of earth. The tireless sun cast its parching rays of incandescence from overhead. Halfway through its daily revolution... That one's actually right. Sorry about that. Small rodents scampered about, occupying themselves in the daily accomplishments of their dismal lives. Dust sprayed over three heaving mounts in blinding clouds while they bore their burdensome cargoes of their struggling overseers.
Okay.
Prepare to embrace your creators in the Stygian haunts of hell, barbarian, gasped the first soldier. Only after you have kissed the fleeting stead of death, wretch, returned Grignr, who, may I add, is our hero of the piece, Grignr the Barbarian, who has a fight against vowels as well as many other things. Just slipped in that one eye to stop it being a total word salad. A sweeping blade of flashing steel riveted from the massive barbarian's hide-enameled shield as his rippling right arm thrust forth. Sending a steel-shod blade to the hilt into the soldier's vital organs. The disemboweled mercenary crumpled from his saddle and sank to the clouded sward, sprinkling the parched dust with crimson droplets of escaping life fluid.
What?
Problem?
What's a sward?
I don't know.
Shall I look it up?
Sward. Yeah, I've heard that word before. Sward is an actual
thing. An expanse of short grass.
Yeah, that works. I don't know what a clouded sward is, but he could fall to the sward. I don't know if anyone's ever written that sentence before, but no. It's not strictly wrong, I suppose.
Escaping life fluid is a great way of describing blood.
Yep, I like that. I like this. The enthused barbarian swilveled about, his shock of fiery red hair tossing robustly in the humid air currents as he faced the attack of the defeated soldier's fellow in arms. Damn you, barbarian, shrieked the soldier as he observed his comrade in death. Observed him? I don't even know why I like observed his comrade in death so much. I think it's just the counterpoint between how calm and collected observed is. Like, he's sitting there sort of like leaning on his sword, like nodding, just like, yes, yes. Yet he's shrieking, damn you, barbarian. Anyway. A gleaming scimitar smote a heavy blow against the renegade's spiked helmet, bringing a heavy cloud over the accordion's misting brain. Shaking off the effects of the pounding blow to his head, Grignr brought down his scarlet-streaked edge against the soldier's crudely forged hauberk, clanging harmlessly to the left side of his opponent. The soldier's stead whinnied as he directed the horse back from the driving blade of the barbarian. Grignr leashed his mount forward as the hoarsely piercing battle cry of his wilderness-bred race resounded from his grinding lungs.
Now that's a sentence. Grinding lungs.
What on earth does that mean? What on earth are grinding lungs? That's just such a tortured sentence as well. The hoarsely piercing battle cry of his wilderness-bred race. Anyway, keep it together. A twirling blade bounced harmlessly from the mighty thief's buckler. As his rolling right arm cleft upward, sending a foot of blinding steel rippling through the Cimmerian's exposed gullet. A gasping gurgle from the soldier's writhing mouth as he tumbled to the golden sand at his feet and wormed agonizingly in his deathbed. Grignr's emerald green orbs glared lustfully at the wallowing soldier struggling before his chestnut swirled mount. His scowling voice reverberated over the dying form in a tone of mocking mirth. You city-bred dog should learn not to antagonize your better. Reining his weary mount ahead, Grignr, uncapitalized, resumed his journey to the Norigolian city of Gorzam, hoping to discover wine, women, and adventure to boil the wild blood coursing through his savage veins. The trek to Gorzom was forced upon Grignr when the soldiers of Kryn were leashed upon him. By a faithless concubine he had wooed. His scandalous activities throughout the Cimmerian city had unleashed throngs of havoc and uproar among its refined patricians, leading them to tack a heavy reward over his head. He had barely managed to escape through the back entrance of the inn he had been guzzling in, as a squad of soldiers... Pounced upon him.
Yep.
After spilling a spout of blood from the leader of the mercenaries as he dismembered one of the officer's arms, he retreated to his mount to make his way towards Gorzom, rumoured to contain hordes of plunder and many young wenches for any man who has the backbone to wrest them away. Chapter 1, end scene.
Yep. I mean, what? What just happened?
I feel a little giddy.
I feel like we were dropped quite quickly into something there.
Yeah, that was very much in media res just there. We were right in the thick of the action from the get-go. My word. So let's see if we can piece together what happened in, like, plain English. So
So there's this guy, Grigner.
I think Grigner. Grigner. That's how I like to pronounce it anyway.
So Grigner is some guy.
A barbarian.
Some barbarian who was killing some soldiers.
Yep, that seems to be what he was getting about. That took up the majority of the chapter just describing in minute detail how Grigner killed these fools.
Do we know why?
Now, I think that we get explained that at the end, because that was sort of going back. He's saying he's on the way towards Gorzam now.
Yeah, when the soldiers of Kryn were leashed upon him by a concubine he had wooed.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing these soldiers found him on his way to Gorzom.
These were soldiers of Kryn who were hunting him down on his way to Gorzom.
Nice. And the reason he's been moving to Gorzom is because he's been run out of Cimmerian City. Or is a Cimmerian City a description of a place?
Wait, where was this?
It says that the trek was forced upon him to Gorzom because of the soldiers being leashed upon him by that concubine.
Yeah, I guess Cimmerian are like a, I don't know, either a race or an empire or something like that.
They put a bounty on him because he did some bad stuff. Scandalous activities.
But why was it a concubine that was able to send them after him, though? Like, you know, concubines, I mean, I know, there's concubines and concubines, I suppose, you know. There's ones that are just, like, basic prostitutes, but others that are part of, like, sultans.
Yeah, she might have been one of the higher-up ones or something. Or
yeah, so, like she might not have been able to directly go to some soldiers and go hunt this guy down, but she might have been able to be like, I was like, oh, this barbarian, he wooed me and did all this to me, and then get, like, whoever she's concubining to go out, send some men after him, but it might still be her fault.
And then
he
made it to Gorzom, right?
He's still en route, I believe.
It says, oh, so is that a bit about the inn?
Yeah, that was happening in Kryn.
Yeah. And that's him leaving for Gorzom. He was in an inn and then got pounced upon.
Yeah, that was his last night in Kryn.
Plunder.
Yeah, he'd caused too much uproar among the refined patricians.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just, what is there to say that it doesn't say for itself?
Well, at least we understand what happened.
I guess we
know why. No, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, we sort of know what happened. It's just like this Grigner seems like a beast. He took out these three guys no trouble.
Yeah, with no remorse. City bred dog should learn not to antagonise your better.
They should, Louis, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Like, the dismal lives of rodents. What's he got against rodents?
I guess, should we move on to chapter 2?
I suppose, just trying to think if there's anything else to bring up about chapter 1. It's just, I mean, no, it was just a lot of violence, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
So, I guess chapter 2.
Yep.
No title again. Arriving after dusk in Gorzom, Grigner descended down a dismal alley, reining his horse before a beaten tavern.
We should have Dismal Watch.
What?
Dismal Rodents, Dismal,
Dismal Alley.
Alley.
Yeah, Dismal Horse. Before a beaten tavern. The red-haired giant strode into the dimly lit hostelry, reeking of foul odours and cheap wine. The air was heavy with chocking fumes, spewing from smouldering torches, one word, encased within Theden's earthen-packed walls.
I think that's meant to be the den's earthen-packed walls.
Right. One word again.
Yeah, so although it could be a guy called Theden, and it just isn't capitalised.
Yeah. Tables were clustered with groups of drunken thieves and cutthroats, tossing dice or making love to willing prostitutes. Can a prostitute not be willing? Like, that's part of their job, right?
I mean,
to always be willing.
You can still like assault a prostitute, you know. You
but back in these days, prostitutes have it easy now.
We probably shouldn't get into that. I think discussing prostitution probably falls outside the remit of this podcast.
I'd like to imagine that when it says tossing dice or making love to willing prostitutes, that it's like they're either tossing dice or making love to willing prostitutes. So some of them are making love to them, some of them are tossing dice to them.
Yeah, take these dice.
That's a euphemism, toss my dice. Okay, so
toss me dice, love.
Eyeing a slender female crouched alone at a nearby bench, Grignr advanced, wishing to wholesomely occupy his time. The flickering torches cast weird shafts of luminescent dancing over the half-naked harlot of his choice. Her stringy orchid twines of hair Why did he pick...
What kind of a description is that?
Her stringy orchid twines of hair swaying gracefully over the lith opaque nose.
Lithe.
What
that's
that
actually
mean?
Spelt right. Just sort of like strong and slender, like, you know, you'd say a panther is lithe or something.
Right, okay.
You know, but it's like smooth.
As she raised a half-drained mug to her pale red lips. Pale red lips. Okay, got it. Pale and red.
Pink?
Yeah. Glancing upward, the alluring complexion noted the stalwart giant as he rapidly approached.
What does that mean?
The alluring complexion
noted the stalwart giant.
I guess she's just a face. She's just a reaction now. Like,
yeah.
An alluring complexion noted the stalwart giant as he rapidly approached. A faint glimmer sparked from the pair of deep blue ovals of the amorous female as she motioned towards Grignr, enticing him to join her. The barbarian seated himself upon a stool at the wench's side, exposing his body.
And this is how you find out if a prostitute's willing or not.
Naked save for a loincloth, brandishing a long steel broadsword, an iron spiral battle helmet, and a thick leather sandals to her unobstructed view.
A single thick leather sandals.
So, not that naked. What's going on? How did he... So, presumably when he went into this inn, he was fully clothed. I hope.
I don't know.
Or he was just, like, up for it that night. He was like, I'm gonna turn up, you know.
Like, I don't know if this is based on any of the text already, but I was imagining that he had, like, a sort of, like, cloak on.
Yeah, because it says that he arrives at Gorzon, and he descends down a dismal alley, puts his horse up, and goes into a tavern. So you'd like to think he's fully clothed at this point.
Well, but he's a barbarian, Louis. Being in a loincloth counts as overdressed.
So how is he naked at all? What's the description of naked, save for all of his clothes?
Well, it's not many clothes. Like, a little scrap of fabric covering his penis and sandals and a helmet. I mean, most of him is not covered by clothes.
Yeah, we know what's
Let's
covering his helmet, but that was terrible. And a thick leather sandals to her unobstructed view.
I mean, so yeah, like, I was imagining that he has, like, a big travelling cloak on around him, and then he was like, wench, look upon this, and opens it to unveil his naked save-from-loincloth self. But again, I'm not sure if that's actually what happened.
So then he goes, thou hast need to occupy your time, barbarian? Questioned the female. Only if something worth offering is within my reach, stated Grigner, as his hands crept to the embrace of the tempting female, who welcomed them with open willingness.
That's not quite what mine says. Mine said, as his hands crept to embrace the tempting female.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're reading the same copy, so yeah. This isn't like the way the stars fall.
Yeah, this should be consistent.
Yeah. From where do you come, barbarian? And by what are you called? Gasped the complying wench. As Grigner smothered her lips with the blazing touch of his flaming mouth. Nice.
It's going to be hard for him to tell her like that.
Yeah. The engrossed Titan ignored the queries of the inquisitive female, pulling her towards him and crushing her... pulling her towards him and crushing her sagging nipples to his yearning chest.
Does that do anything for you, Louis?
I like to imagine that it's just her nipples which are sagging.
Yeah, otherwise the pertest breast you've ever seen. But those nipples, like the nipples of a 60-year-old, they're like fucking cocktail sausages.
Brilliant. Hanging like string. Without struggle, she gave in, winding her soft arms around the harshly bronzed hide of Grigner. Corded shoulder blades. Okay, that was terrible. Winding her soft arms around the harshly bronzed hide of Grigner corded shoulder blades.
I mean, it's pretty terrible anyway.
Yeah,
bronzed hide. I can't hold that against you.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is, that sentence. I can't do better than that.
I think I know what that's meant to be saying. I think it's meant to be saying winding her soft arms around the harshly bronzed hide of Grigner's corded shoulder blades.
Right.
I think that's what he's trying to say.
As his calloused hands caressed her firmed, protruding busts. Busts.
Yeah, that's different.
So we've just got confirmation there that they're firm. And yeah. Protruding, and yet sagging nipples.
Yes.
He's got a type.
We can't hold it against him.
Okay, this bit's amazing. You make love well, wench, admitted Grigner, as he reached for the vessel of potent wine his charge had been quaffing.
Yes.
Yes. More quaffing, please, in books.
Yeah.
Is that making love?
It's not the definition I would have used.
But she makes love well.
Yeah, that's good to know. I like that he admitted it. Like, you know, he's a little bit sort of like sheepish and just like, you make love well. I didn't think you knew how to make love, but you let me kiss you and crush your sagging
you
nipples
me, wench.
Well.
Yeah.
Well done, wench. Pass me the wine to quaff.
A flying foot caught the mug Grigner had taken hold of, sending its blood-red content sloshing over a flickering crescent, leashing tongues of bright orange flame to the foot-trodden floor. Okay?
I'm not sure. Okay.
Remove yourself, sirrah. The wench belongs to me, blabbered a drunken soldier, too far consumed by the influences of his vile brew... Virile brew to take note of the superior size of his adversary. Grigner lithely bounded from the startled female. His face lit up to an ashen red ferocity, and eyes locked in a searing feral blaze towards the swaying soldier.
I like his face lit up. He's so excited.
Yeah. Presumably still naked here.
When is he ever not?
Yeah. To hell with you, braggart, bellowed the angered accordion. What? as he hefted his...
That's his race.
Right. Not an accordion, by the way, an accordion with an E.
Yeah.
He's not the instrument.
I wonder why that was chosen as a name for a barbarian tribe or race or whatever.
bellowed the angered accordion as he hefted his finely honed broadsword. The staggering soldier clumsily reached towards the pommel of his dangling sword, but before his hand ever touched the oaken hilt of a silvered... a silvered flash was slicing the heavy air. The thews of the savage's lashing right arm bulged from the glistening bronzed hide as his blade bit deeply into the soldier's neck, lopping off the confused head of his senseless tormentor. With a nauseating thud, the severed oval toppled to the floor as the segregated torso of Grigner's bovine antagonist...
Amazing.
As the segregated torso of Grigner's bovine antagonist swayed, then collapsed in a pool of swirled crimson. I think we've had about six different metaphors for blood.
He likes mixing up how he describes it. He really does.
We might have to pick our favourite at the end.
Yeah, might have to have a little post-mortem when we're done.
Top five blood metaphors.
Top five dismals.
In the confusion, the soldier's fellows confronted Grigner with unsheathed cutlasses directed towards the latter's scowling makeup. The slut should have picked his quarry more carefully, roared the victor in a mocking baritone growl, as he swiped his dripping blade on the prostrate form and returned it to its scabbard.
Wait, so he was calling that man a slut?
I think what he's saying is that the whore, or the wench, or the slut, should have not been friends with this guy? I don't know. Yeah, why? Maybe so he's calling...
The slut should have picked his quarry more carefully.
I suppose he is calling him a slut. Slut shaming.
What a slut.
Yeah.
Absolute bovine slut. Bovine.
I'm not sure what he was going for there.
This like predates Monkey Island, so not even that.
Nice reference, bro. The fool should have shown more prudence. However, you shall rue your actions while rotting in the pits, stated one of the sprawled soldier's comrades. Grigner's hand began to remove his blade from its leather housing, but retarded the motion in face of the blades waving before his face.
He probably shouldn't have put his sword back.
For some reason, this bit's indented.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's up with that.
So, it must be important. Dismiss your hand from the hilt, barbarian, or you shall find a foot of steel sheathed in your gizzard.
Who talks like that? Who says dismiss your hand from the hilt?
I don't know, but I like it.
Yeah.
You knew what he meant.
I guess I did.
Grigner weighed his position, observing his plight, whereupon he took the soldier's advice as the only logical choice. To attempt to hack his way from his present predicament could only warrant certain death. He was of no mind to bring upon his own demise if an alternate path presented itself. The will to necessitate his life forced him to yield to the superior forces, in hopes of a moment of carelessness later upon the part of his captors, in which he could effect a more plausible means of escape. Again, this bit is indented.
Weirdly indented. Yep.
You may steady your arms. I will go without a struggle. Your decision is a wise one, yet perhaps you would have been better off had you forced death. The soldier's mouth wrinkled to a sadistic grin of knowing mirth as he prodded his prisoner on with his sword point.
That's such a long... winded smile sentence.
What happened to the good old days of smirks?
Yeah.
Take me back.
I can't deal with this. No mouths wrinkling to sadistic grins of knowing mirth.
Oh dear, that's a good one.
And this is where I'm taking over, isn't it?
Yes.
After an indiscriminate period of marching through the slinking alleyways and dim moonlighted streets, the procession confronted a massive seraglio. The palace area was surrounded by an iron grating with a lush garden upon all sides.
I'm looking up seraglio.
It is a real word.
Do you know what it means?
Vaguely.
This is so specific. The woman's apartments in an Ottoman palace.
Huh. That was... I think I would have talked longer and before getting to the point, but that's broadly what I thought it was.
Nice.
Nice. Nice.
So that gives us an idea of where this is.
Yeah. Good sense of place. Good.
Indiscriminate period of marching.
The palace area was surrounded by an iron grating, with a lush garden upon all sides. The group was admitted through the gilded gateway, and Grignr was led along, one word, a stone pathway bordered by a plush vegetation lustfully enhanced by the moon's shimmering rays. Upon reaching the palace, the group was granted entrance, and after several minutes of explanation, led through several winding corridors to a richly draped chamber. Confronting the group was a short, stocky man seated upon a golden throne. Tapestries of richly draped regal blue silk covered all walls of the chamber, while the steps leading to the throne were plated with sparkling white ivory. The man upon the throne had a naked wench seated at each of his arms, and a trusted advisor seated in the back of him.
I like to imagine they're sat on the same throne, and he's just like...
He's sitting on his lap.
And you walk in, and you can only see one guy, and then suddenly the other guy's like, hello! Like,
poking his head. Peter in the back. I'm his trusted advisor, and I'm in his back. I've always imagined, like, these guys could get, like, pretty hedonistic. Do you reckon he's, like, actually in him right now? I mean, these guys could be pretty crazy. This trusted advisor party up back, naked wenches party out front.
Yep.
This is party central right here.
What a time to be throne king,
man. I mean, you know, it's always pretty good being king, but this guy knows how to party.
Yeah.
Jesus. At each corner of the chamber, a guard stood at attention, with upraised pikes supported in their hands. Golden chainmail. Gold wouldn't make very good chainmail at all. This guy is, like, very, like, form beyond function here. Like, maybe gold-plated would be alright, but...
Go into more detail.
Gold's a very soft metal. You don't really want to make any kind of armour or weaponry out of it, because it doesn't hold a good edge, and it just kind of squishes. You know, if you had, like, a gold plate, like, protecting your arm and a sword hit it, I mean, it'd be better than not having it there, but it'd still just, like, squish and, like, fuck up your arm.
Yeah, but is there anything to be said for swag?
I mean, you can't put a price on swag, even if it is your guards getting fucked up, like, immediately. It's like, but God, they look good. I am so pimping here. With my two bitches up front naked and my best bro round back. I mean, look at this guy and what a position he's in at life. I'm clearly in no position to, you know, like, judge his choices, because son's got it made. Oh, gee, where the hell even was I?
Golden chainmail.
Yeah, golden chainmail adorning their torsos and barred helmets emitting scarlet plumes enshrouded their heads. The man rose from his throne to the dais surrounding it. His plush turquoise robe dangled loosely from his chunky frame. The soldiers surrounding Grignr fell to their knees with heads bowed to the stone masonry of the floor in fearful dignity to their sovereign liege.
Why is there a comma there, sovereign liege?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I didn't get that in the reading at all. They're sovereign liege. Maybe it's the book showing due diligence to the king.
Mm.
You know, it can't even, like, narrate about him without showing him his due. Liege? Yeah, this seems like a good opportunity for Grignr to escape with all the soldiers in the room, like, prostrated on the ground. It didn't even mention that they took his sword off of him. Though I'm assuming they did. Explain the purpose of this intrusion upon my chateau.
Suddenly a chateau. Why is he calling
this
it
this? This was a Seraglio. Your serenity.
Nice.
Resplendent in noble grandeur, we have bought this yokel for
yokel.
You. Where is this? Where in time and space is this?
Yokel.
No. The soldier gestured towards Grignr for the redress of your all-knowing wisdom in judgment regarding his fate. Also, since this was weirdly indented too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know, maybe we shouldn't make too much of that. That might have been the fault of the person setting up the website
from. Yeah, and it seems to happen to indicate someone else is speaking.
Mm.
But yeah, it might just be this website.
Yeah. It's curious. Down on your knees, lout, and pay proper homage to your sovereign, commanded the pudgy noble of Grignr. What? So I think it's saying it's commanding it of him from the pudgy noble. But
yeah.
But that's so horribly written.
Mm-hmm.
By the surly beard of Murith. Grignr kneels to no man, scowled the massive barbarian.
By the surly beard of Murig.
I want to have that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like below, like an image of an angry beard.
Surly beard. And that name
I think that's the contender for the title so far.
Yeah. And that name is M-R-I-F-K. Murfk.
I don't even know how to pronounce that. I think we're as close as we could hope to get, but Jesus Christ. Anyway, come on. You dare to deal this blasphemous act to me? You are indeed brave, stranger, yet your valour smacks of foolishness. I find you to be the only fool, sitting upon your pompous throne, enhancing the rolling flabs of your belly in the midst of your elaborate luxury and... One word.
Fucking hell, this guy's really going for it. He's like the king. Or something.
Something. The soldier standing at Grignr's side smote him heavily in the face with the flat of his sword, cutting short the harsh words and knocking his battered helmet to the masonry with an echoing clang. The paunchy noble, sagging round face, flushed suddenly pale, then pastily lit up to lustrous cherry-red radiance. Fucking hell, is this guy a chameleon? He's all about the place. His lips trembled with malicious rage while emitting a muffled sibilant gibberish.
What?
What's going on? His sagging flabs rolled like a tub of upset jelly and compressed as he sucked in his gut in an attempt to conceal his softness.
I'm picturing Jabba the Hutt.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, God.
What is happening? Why is he so triggered? He's like a king. The guy that just said this to him just got smacked in the face with a sword, yet he's like freaking out. Just muffled, sibilant gibberish. Oh, we find out what he is. The prince regained his stature. Or statue. The prince regained his statue. So he walked down to the bottom of the throne where Grignr had taken his statue, took it off him, went back up to the top.
This is mine.
My statue. Statue regained. Then spoke to the soldiers surrounding Grignr, his face conforming to an ugly expression of sadistic humour. Take this uncouth heathen to the vault of misery, and be sure that his agonies are long and drawn out before death can release him. As you wish, sire, your command shall be heeded immediately, answered the soldier on the right of Grignr, as he stared into the barbarian's seemingly unaffected face. The advisor seated in the back of the noble, still seated in the back.
So even when he got up...
I like to imagine he just stood up with him.
Yeah. Oh, well, it says here, slowly rose.
Aww. I got too excited. The advisor, seated in the back of the noble, slowly rose and advanced to the side of his master, motioning the wenches seated at his sides to remove themselves. He lowered his head and whispered to the noble, "Eminence, the punishment you have decreed will cause much misery to this scum, yet it will last only a short time. Then release him to the land beyond the sufferings of the human body. Why not mellow him in one of the subterranean vaults for a few days, then send him to life labour in one of your buried mines? To one such as he, a life spent in the confinement of the Stygian pits will be infinitely more appropriate and lasting torture." This guy's like slimy. This is like that evil kind of vizier kind of figure,
mm-hmm.
whispering that evil into our fat Jabba the Prince. The noble cupped his drooping double double chin in the folds of his brimming palm, mediating for a moment upon the rationality of the counselor's words, then raised his shaggy brown eyebrows and turned towards the advisor, eyes aglow. Oh god, more fucking word salad. "As always, Agafind, you speak with great wisdom."
What's going on with these names? They've all got their base
one
vowel and then
just
a fist. He's just like palmed his keyboard. Well, there wouldn't have been a keyboard back then, but
yeah, his typewriter. God, can you imagine that? This picture, little 16-year-old Jim Theus tapping this away. it's like you know. He grabs a load of the keys, fires, puts them into a shotgun, grabs one vowel, drops that in there too, and then just fires it at a wall. That's his name. Agafind. I'll start that whole part again. "As always, Agafind, you speak with great wisdom. Your words ring of great knowledge concerning the nature of one such as he, saith the king." I thought he was a prince. Fucking hell.
Mm.
Like, no time ago at all. Consistency, Jesus.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme with these books.
Yeah, I mean, it's a recurring theme of bad authors not being able to be consistent. I mean, I suppose it shouldn't be a surprise. But the noble turned towards the prisoner with a noticeable shimmer reflecting in his frog-like eyes.
I'm sorry, but if you're fat, your eyes are not fat. Like, that's not something that gets fat.
Yeah, and even then, frogs don't have fat eyes. What does that even mean? What? Explain.
I want someone to draw this guy. Yes.
That sounds amazing. He sounds like some weird freak chimera. Not a human. The noble turned towards the prisoner with a noticeable shimmer reflecting in his frog-like eyes, and his lips contorting to a greasy grin. "I have decided to void my previous decree. The prisoner shall be removed to one of the palace's underground vaults. There he shall stay until I have decided that he has sufficiently simmered, whereupon he is to be allowed to spend the remainder of his days at labour in one of my mines." Upon hearing this, Grigner realized that his fate would be far less merciful than death to one such as he, who is used to roaming the countryside at will. A life of confinement would be more than his body and mind could stand up to. This type of life would be immeasurably worse than death. "I shall never understand the ways, if your twisted civilization. I simply defend my honour and am condemned to life confinement by a pig who sits on his royal ass wooing horse and knows nothing of the affairs of the land he imagines to rule. Lectures Grigner ?
What? So one thing is, I'm quite confused by like the use of language in this. Like, it's obviously very medieval-y type fantasy language, and then suddenly it's like royal ass wooing whores, and there was another bit earlier on where it said that he smacked of attitude or something like that. And then lectures Grigner, like speaking in the third person.
Yeah, I'm guessing that isn't intentional. It feels like it can't have been. because he definitely is lecturing. it's getting very meta now that the narrator is now not sure what Grigner's doing. It's like, is he lecturing? Royal ass wooing horse. That's amazing. Anyway, enough of this. Away with the slut before I lose my control. You try to kill me, Jim Thiss. Do you want some company? Fuck. Away with the slut. Seeing the peril of his position, Grigner searched for an opening, crushing prudence to the sward. Why not to the ground? He's in the middle of a Seragaglio's main room. There's no sward. He's in a palace / Seragaglio.
/ chateau.
Yes, especially chateau. This floor's going to be like paved or mosaics. This isn't like some like barren wilderness underfoot or anything. He was right the last time he used sward. Now he's like way off. Okay. Seeing the peril of his position, Grigner searched for an opening, crushing prudence to the sward. He ploughed into the soldier to his left arm, taking hold of his sword. Oh, so they did take it off him. And bounding to the dais, supporting the prince before... Like, supporting. Like, it's such an effort to hold him up. He's so fat. Before the startled guards could regain their composure, Agafind leaped Grigner and his sire, but found a sword blade permeating the length of his ribs before he could loose his weapon.
It's another case of the guards being horrific in this book. Like, you know, they're just not ready. And he's not exactly been, like, compliant, and he's been quite aggressive, if anything. You'd think by this point they would be...
You would have thought they would have, like, bound his hands or something.
Or at least be on edge, based on his...
Yeah, like a guy took out a sword to smack him in the face with from its sheath. So I'm guessing that then, after deciding that he was unruly enough to, like, attack with a sword, he then put his sword back in his scabbard and then just, like, immediately stopped... I don't know why they weren't still forcing Grigner to be, like, prostrated on the ground or whatever in front of him. But, my word.
Going back to when he called him a slut, I like to imagine that as a, what was it, a 16-year-old who wrote this?
Yes.
I like to imagine that he only knew, like, certain insults.
Yeah.
And so he just, like, used...
Everyone's a slut. Yeah. Yep, seems likely.
I've just read ahead and this is amazing.
Spoilers, Lou. Jeez. Okay. God, get it together, Peter. We're close. We nearly finished the chapter. The counsellor slumped to his knees as Grigner slid his crimson blade from Agafin's ribcage. The fat prince stood undulating in insurmountable fear before the edge of the fiery-maned comet. Fiery-maned comet, fuck. I'll just have to say that again. The fat prince stood undulating in insurmountable fear before the edge of the fiery-maned comet, his flaps of jellied blubber pulsating to and fro in ripples of flowing terror. I don't know what we can add to that.
He hasn't even been hit yet, and he's, like, pulsating, rippling, and...
He's making all sorts of movements.
None of them smart. Or right, dignified.
All of them are getting accentuated by the flab.
No wonder he's not king if he reacts like this.
Yeah, he doesn't deserve to be king. Should have spent less time on his fat-ass wooing halls and more time in the gym. Come on.
No, it's Jim that's spending time in him. Ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba. Mm. That, just want to say, is that you clapping, or...?
Yes.
Good.
Anyway, where were we? Where is your wisdom and power now, your majesty? Growled Grigner.
Alliteration, brilliant.
I like it. The prince went rigid as Grignr discerned him glazing over his shoulder. Right? He swilived to note the cause of his noble's attention, raised his sword over his head, and prepared to leash a vicious downward cleft, but fell short as the haft of a steel-rimed pike, clashed against his unguarded skull. Then blackness and solitude, silence enshrouding, and ever-peaceful reigned supreme. Before me, sirrah, before me as always. Ha, 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 nobly cackled.
Nobly cackled.
I wonder how much, like, sound peak editing I'm going to have to do of this, of me just screeching like a harpy into this microphone.
Of you nobly cackling.
Yes, so nobly, but especially cackling. But yeah, that closes chapter 2. Like we said, that was quite a long one. So, comments? What happened? What the fuck happened?
Well, what's his face? Grignr got to that town.
Yep.
Found a wench with drooping nipples.
Yep.
But firm breasts.
Yep.
Made love to her by pressing himself up against her.
And kissing her.
Yep. And then he was like, that's it.
Yep.
That's me done. How was that for you?
Unwillingly admitted she was good at it.
Yeah.
Started drinking his wine when a bovine drunkard knocked it from his hand.
He cut his head off. As you do.
Like immediately, yep. Defending his honour.
Some people didn't like that.
Yeah, like Grignr was just like happy with himself and thought that was
that's all that's going to happen after that. No consequences.
Yeah, like not even like expecting this to explode into a bar fight or anything. He's just like, yep, that's how things go. Wiped his sword on the guy and sheathed it. Was about to get back to, I suppose, making love to the droopy-teated wench again. But then, like, these other guys that were with him with their swords were like, dude, we're here, and we're all pointing swords at you. You're coming with us. And Grignr was like, yeah.
You got me bang to rights here. I did cut his head off, didn't I?
Yeah. And he realised that as all of these guys already had swords in their hand pointing at him, and he'd, you know, put his away and was about to pick up his wine again, I suppose. Yeah. He was like, yeah, I probably shouldn't fight my way out of this one. I'll probably die. Even me, mighty Grignr, with my bronze shoulders and nakedness, suited perfectly for battle. Then, I suppose, he was escorted by these soldiers through to the palace/Seragaglio/chateau
mm-hmm.
that this prince/king was making his home in, sitting on his fat ass wooing whores with Agafind the counsellor in behind him. And then, basically, what Grignr did was told to the prince. Prince didn't like that. He was a bit angry, basically asked Grignr to apologise and pay homage to him. Instead, Grignr gave him a piece of his mind before being smacked in the face with the flat of a sword. And in quivering fat rage, the prince basically summoned him to be chucked in an oubliette to die. Though I don't think he said it in as many words. But Agafin said that it would be better for him to be put in the dark caverns for a little while to mellow, whatever that means. I'm not sure quite. Whatever. And to then be put to work in the mines for the rest of his life. And the prince agreed that'd be good. You know, he likes the idea of causing Grignr more suffering in his life. Grignr agrees that's a fate worse than death for him. So he stole a sword from the horribly awful guards and rushed the dais. He killed Agafind, he ran him through, which it sounded bad. And as he was standing there lording it over the quivering prince/king, he got like smacked on the back of the head with a pike because he forgot there were still like, I forget how many guards, like 6-8 guards in the room. And those were just the ones that escorted him in, let alone the other ones. So, yeah. He probably would have done better to have attacked the guards after he took the sword, rather than the prince who, let's be honest, sounds like he couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag. But, yeah, and now we're going to find out what happens to Grignr next. I'm guessing what Agafind had planned for him, but we'll see.
Indeed.
So, wider comments about the chapter. Anything else that we picked up on?
I'm just enjoying it, to be honest. It's
amazing.
It's absolutely mad. It's like someone threw a thesaurus
yes.
at a page and just, like, you know when you're looking at a thesaurus and you're, like, a lot of the words you're like, yeah, that's a good one, yeah. Then there's always one word where you're like, what the... How, like that, I've never even heard of that word.
I love those words. I usually use them and nobody knows what the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's like you picked every single one of those words and put them mm-hmm. in. I think what you started this off with, that description of, what was his name, Jim?
Yeah, Jim.
It's perfect.
What, the little quote I got off of him?
Yeah, of he, like, is the yeah. master of picking the wrong words yeah. and putting them in the wrong place.
A malaprop genius, a McGonagall of prose with an eerie gift for choosing the wrong word and then misapplying it. And just for a bit of context, because I didn't know it until I checked it out, McGonagall is a poet from a few hundred years ago that was famous for writing, as they put it on the Wikipedia page, doggerel poetry. So awful poetry. He was famous for it. So, yeah. Just another bit of history lesson. Don't say we don't do Hobbit to teach the young'uns. You probably shouldn't be listening to this if you're young. Get out. I swear a lot.
Yeah, my favourite thing, I think, is I quite like the names that are given to people.
They've all been amazing so far.
Just looking over it now, I didn't even realise there's one that has absolutely... Oh no, it does have a vowel. It starts with a vowel. But there's no vowel in the middle. Agfund. Agfund.
I pronounce it Agafind. But
why?
Is there really not another A in it?
Unless it's spelt wrongly there.
Well, I mean, that's also possible.
Like, at the end, it says...
Like, yeah, that one's Agfind. Ugh.
Oh yeah, Agafand. Agafind. Says earlier on, so I guess it is just spelled wrong.
Yeah, I think we have more. Actually, we have. I think we have those two so far. Mm. So we don't know which one's the misspelling yet. I guess if he isn't dead, we'll find out, and if he is dead, we'll just never know. We'll just have to live in this weird Schrodinger's Agfind forever. Like, I just, Grignr's a fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm. He seems to have no, like, regard for what he's doing, no, like, control.
I mean, it seems like that's his, like, barbarian upbringing, like his little lecture question mark that he gave to the fat prince. Where, what was he saying? What did he say?
I mean, to be fair, he's bringing this on himself. Like, he did just behead someone for... Not much. He said, I shall never understand the ways of your twisted civilization. I simply defend my honour and am condemned to life confinement by a pig who sits on his royal ass wooing whores and knows nothing of the affairs of the land he imagines to rule. Lectures, Grignr?
Yep. I mean, like, it's clear that Grignr's, like, the weird thing here. He doesn't understand civilization at all. So he thinks all of this is okay.
What a slut.
What a slut you are, Grignr. But, yeah, I don't even know. But he's, despite the fact that he seems efficient at killing people, he also doesn't seem to have that much awareness. Like, did he forget about all of those guards when he went up to stab Agafind and threaten the prince? Like, he was just, like, standing there just like, where's your wisdom and power now? Like, He was taken here into the room with all these guards. They were standing around him. One of them hit him with a sword like 30 seconds ago. How did he not see them attacking him? Did he think they're all just going to stand there as he ran towards the dais?
I don't think he thinks like 5 seconds ahead of what he's doing.
I don't know if he thinks. It just seems to be a case where so far everyone seems to be a fucking idiot.
I should stop doing this. I just skipped forward.
Stop doing that!
And I just saw the word slut again. In the completely wrong context.
Oh man.
We should have slot vision. If anyone's been following our previous series
coverage, yeah,
you'll know of a segment called Chuckle Vision.
Yeah, where we count the repetitions of the words chuckled and smirked, just that come up in the book. Been going through a bit of a dry patch, still getting a couple, but there were quite a chuckle density earlier on in the book, and we're hoping it'll pick up again. But yeah, there's a lot of sluts in this book. I wonder if we should start up Slut Watch. But now, you see, the problem with this book is that it doesn't have a plot, really. At least, like, you know, there's no big...
That hasn't stopped us before.
No. It's... I won't have that said about The Way the Stars Fall. It definitely has a plot. There's a lot to talk about the ramifications of how things interact with each other. But this is just... is just making love, in inverted commas, violence and insults, basically, just strung together with dismal alleyways. Like, there's like no wider context of any of this to talk about. We don't have any, you know, I don't even know what we can speculate about the world, you know. They don't even give us, like, enough of a grain to speculate about something. What do we know about the Norgolian Empire? Nothing. We have the phrase, the Norgolian Empire. What else about it? Nothing.
We know they have a fat prince.
We don't even know if he's a prince of the Norgolian Empire. Maybe he crossed out of that on his way towards... Gorzom that he's in now. Maybe Gorzom isn't part of the Argolian Empire. Maybe Kryn was the borderline. We don't know. But thankfully, this book is so amazing that, you know, it speaks for itself. You know, there's plenty of stuff just happening in the moment. There's half of the time, but we've talked about it a bit. I'm not even sure how much there even is to discuss other than just, look at this madness. Look at it. Look at what's happening. Who wrote this? You know, you can kind of understand why people are questioning if it's an intentional satire.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is so perfectly awful. But yeah, I'm not sure if I really have that much to say about Chapter 2, really. Like I say, res ipsa loquita, the thing very much speaks for itself.
Indeed.
So, I mean, I reckon that's probably about enough. This has gone on for over an hour now. We'll probably... So, I imagine, if this is anything to go by, this will probably be split into about 3 parts for the Eye of Argon, if this is at all indicative. 3 or 4. We'll have to see. Don't know how long some of the later chapters are. Chapter 1 was bloody tiny. So, don't worry. As we said, we'll be back to The Way the Stars Fall before you all know it. But next week, we'll be back with more amazing... amazing bovine opponents and rippling fat princes as we prepare to stare back into the Eye of Argon and the awful prose of Jim Thiers. See you next week.
See ya.
Bye.